You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. After a couple of weeks off, we are back. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall ready and raring to go ahead of this week's two events, the Tenerife Open on the European Tour and a really top quality event on the PGA Tour this week, the Valspar Championship. All the betting available as per usual at williamhill.com and on the app as well. And don't forget, top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the Valspar. Plus, we are paying eight places each way as well. Dave Tindall joins me to look through the golf this week. First of all, good morning to you, Mr. Tindall.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
We had a decent week last week. I actually managed to watch quite a lot of the Zurich Classic of New Orleans and Team Mullet coming out on top in the end. Mark Leishman and Cameron Smith winning the Zurich Classic and beating the South African duo of Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel in the playoff. A little bit of an unsatisfactory end to that playoff with Oosthuizen driving into the water on the first playoff hole, but it was a decent watch, and I think a lot of people want more events like that. What's your thoughts on that particular situation? Do you think we have enough team events, or would you like to see a few more thrown into the mix on the calendar?
Yeah, well, maybe not a few more, maybe one more somewhere. I think it's a nice sort of breather for everybody. Maybe attracts an audience that you might not get, possibly. Especially when you see, you know, the mullet thing going viral and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, possibly another one. Maybe some sort of different format. I'm not quite sure how or what. But I think, yeah, the players enjoy them and it attracted a good field last week.
Yeah, good event, and won by the Aussie partnership of Leishman and Smith in the end. And on the European Tour, we had Garrick Higo winning the Grand Canaria Open, and his putting was just absolutely phenomenal throughout the championship.
Yeah, I think I saw Matt Coopan write something that said about South African sort of major winners and looking ahead to the future. Well, you think of how well left-handers have done at Augusta, left-handers with a nice putting touch. Mm. You know, I think Phil Mickelson may be one for the future. I don't know. Get some William Hill special Higo to win the Masters in the next 10 years or something like that.
Well, we saw Robert McIntyre play well, didn't we?
Well, yeah, that fed into the idea as well, didn't they? So yeah, maybe if he does qualify soon, a top debutant or something like that. But yeah, he's one to watch, isn't he? He looks a fantastic prospect.
And it would be remiss of me not to mention Stuart Sink's winner a fortnight ago as well, Dave. But we didn't do the podcast, but you put a tweet out a couple of days before, perhaps, the
it
event
certainly
started.
Wasn't after, yes.
No, it certainly wasn't after. And that tweet obviously went viral in the aftermath of Sink winning. Must have been your most successful tweet ever, Dave.
Yeah, it didn't have a lot to beat, to be fair. But yeah, I don't know quite why. Well, it was maybe the nature of it. Obviously, you can tweet something that looks sort of quite compelling and then it just goes up in smoke horribly. But I suppose the thing with that was he immediately made it look quite good on day one and he just sort of stayed there with his wire-to-wire win. So it got a lot of traction, that one. And I think the American, a few sort of influencers in America picked up on it, which probably gave it a bit of a tweeting life. I think Jeff Feinberg was one onto it quick. So yeah, that was quite fun, that.
No, well done. Well done. Not every day you have a three-figure prize winner on the PGA Tour.
Certainly not.
So, yeah, well done with that. Let's talk about this week then, Dave. Hopefully you've got some nuggets of information for us over the course of the next half hour or so. Matthias Schwab and Antoine Rosner head the betting for the Tenerife Open. 16-1. Garrick Higo is 18-1. Joost Luiten is 25s. JB Hansen in the betting at 28-1. Victor Dubuisson is 28-1. Kurt Kitayama 28-1. Maximilian Kiefer is 28-1. Torbjörn Olesen, 30s. Justin Harding is 30-1. Laurie Kanter and Guido Migliozzi are both 33s, along with Callum Hill, and it's 35-1 and bigger. The remainder, I think we're going to get very similar scoring to last week, depending on what happens with the wind here. Dave, the event hosted by the Costa Adeja Golf Club, and it's actually hosted an event before, the Canarias Open de España, way back in 2003. That event was won with a 22 under par total way back then. And the course looks really short by modern day standards, a par 71 measuring just 6,857 yards. And strangely, on the layout, Dave, six par threes, five par fives, which is pretty bizarre. And it's expected to be a doddle for these players.
Yeah, there's a few tweets gone around, haven't there, about some of the records that it broke back in 2003. Most first-round scores under par, most players under par at the cut. Lowest cut, was it? I think it was Mikko Ilonen made four eagles in one round. It's a bit silly, isn't it? But, yeah, it's a birdie fest written all over this one, so that's... Well, that can make it tricky, can't it, sometimes? You just think he's got the hottest putter, but I think there's a bit more to it than that. And wouldn't be the biggest surprise if a lot of people might reinvest their Higo winnings. I think quite a few were on him last week. He's 18-1 this time. Yeah. A few might leave a few chips on the table for him, because he's the type who could quickly follow up, and it's not the hardest test.
I think he's a fine price at the top of the betting. If you're looking for one of those top three in the market, a couple at 16-1 in Schwab and Rosner, and then Higo at 18-1. It seems like we're going to have a situation here where a hot hand with a putter and quite accurate iron play is going to... I mean, when Charles Schwartzel played here in 2003, I think I read on Golf Betting System that he said he didn't even play well and he could still shoot a low number because there's no danger off the tee here. And another thing, Paul Williams, you mentioned a couple of stats there. Paul McGinley played the par fives in 21 under par for the week, which is just astonishing, isn't it? So I wouldn't put anyone off backing Higo 18-1 at the top of the betting anyway.
Yeah, I'm of a similar opinion, really. 21, I mean, Paul McGinley's not exactly the longest sitter, is he? So that's incredible, that stat. That'd probably be the stat of the week. We've got a jingle.
Not yet, we're recording this remotely, so just getting it set up on Zoom has been all we could manage for this week's podcast, I think, Dave. Let's get to the picks then. Have you got any picks here?
I have one pick, David, yes.
Yeah, just one pick for me as well. So I'll let you lead off.
Yeah, so I will look to last week. My pick is, I think he's a really nice price this week. Let's check if it's still there. 50-1, Connor Syme.
Yeah.
Looked not at him. Yours, just, though.
No, not my pick, but I've gone with someone of a maybe a similar ilk who played well last week and is what I consider to be a decent price. I looked at Syme closely. He had he fell down the leaderboard on Sunday with that eight on the back nine, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously didn't start the best with with a 71, but then those middle two rounds, he just blitzed it, didn't he? 61, 62, 68 in round four, as you say, compromised by that quadruple. But he came fifth, which was good for each way backers. Just two starts earlier, he'd come third in the Kenya Open with 65 in round one, 64 in round four. So throwing in all these low numbers. You mentioned the par fives this week. Well, he's 23rd in par fives this season. He's 19th in birdies. So that's nice that he's, you know, in the top 25. That's very high up season-wise. Just seems to play really well in Spain as well. His last four starts in Spain, this adds in a couple of Challenge Tour events, but last four starts in Spain, fifth last week, eighth in the Andalusia Masters, 15th in the Challenge Tour Grand Final, and fifth in the Andalusia Costa del Sol match play. Obviously a different format, but mixed format. But clearly, yeah, he loves playing in that. Also 10th in the South African Open. You'd have to go too far back to find that in his record. So all in all, just someone shooting super low scores at 50 to 1, you know, and turning them into finishes, fifth and third. If you've got two top fives in your last three finishes, the world's best fields, I think 50 to 1 is more than fair on Conor Syme.
Yeah, I can see it. Conor Syme available at 50 to 1. My fancy is slightly shorter in the betting at 40 to 1, and I quite like Jeff Winter. This week at 40 to 1. He played really well last week, particularly on the weekend. And I think last week is going to be a determining factor in what happens this week. And he was third in the Gran Canaria Open, sensational over the last 36 holes, shooting 14 under par over the weekend. He excelled on approach, ranked first in the field on Saturday and 12th in the field on Sunday. And in addition to that, he putted superbly, 14th, strokes game putting on Saturday, 7th on Sunday. And there's no guarantee that that's going to carry over to this week. But if it does, I think he's a big player. And he finished 14th in the Qatar Masters, three starts back. And just one damaging round of 77 on Saturday, scuppered his chance to hit the frame. And he should enjoy conditions this week, much as he did last week. So I thought Jeff Winter at 40 to 1, if you're looking for one each way, it was a decent price for Jeff Winter. So 40 to 1, he's my sole selection for the Tenerife Open. But as you mentioned at the top, Dave, it's going to be an event that's determined by a hot putter. And I think the other event offers slightly more attractive betting opportunities this week, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. It's always difficult when it's going to be won by 20 and more under. We've both, I think, agreed on Higo could be worth a look. I'm interested to see what Bjørn Olesen does this week. Last time. Shot second round 61. He's obviously had his problems off the course, but in his last two events, I mean, there's a bit of a gap between them. 13th in golf in Dubai and then 5th last week. Obviously, he's a Ryder Cup player. 30 to 1. Still maybe too many guesses, but you know, if he wins off the back of a top five, you can't say he hadn't signalled it.
Yeah, I liked at that sort of price range, Guido Migliozzi, I thought would go well at 33 to 1. And if there's one player that's got the chance to be much better than this field, it's Laurie Kanter, in my opinion, at 33s. And maybe similar sentiment applies to Sami Välimäki at 35 to 1, even though I might think he might want a slightly tougher test. Laurie Kanter, I think, can be or has the opportunity in the future to be the best player in this field. So 33 to 1 when he's there, 10th in the betting, seems reasonable as well.
Yeah, final mention, another kind of Spanish specialist, if you like, JB Hansen. He's got a win. I mean, some of these are sort of lower tier, but he's got a win in the Nordic Golf League. And then if you look beyond that, a couple more top fours in that, then you move on to that next level. He's got a 9th in the Challenge Tour. And then last three European Tour starts in Spain, 4th, 17th and 7th. The 7th coming last week. So he's another one who particularly likes a bit of Spanish sun on his back. So he's 28.
Yeah, nice. And just want to mention one more name at a bigger price here just before we move on. Pep Angles, the Spaniard, I think is a fair price this week at 80 to 1. He actually finished second behind Higo in the Open to Portugal in a similar setup. That form obviously reads pretty well in the context of this event now. And he's a decent iron player. So if you wanted one at a bigger price, Pep Angles, I thought was worth a few quid at 80 to 1. Is it Angles or is it Anglais?
Well, I was going to say, is that the actual correct Spanish pronunciation?
That might be completely wrong, in all honesty. But I was going, it could be Pep Anglais, I suppose, couldn't it?
Yeah, Angles, surely. I mean, he's not Alan McManus, is he? And it's
still
nice
on at the moment, though, isn't it?
Yes, to link it to confuse all the American listeners. Alan McManus is a snooker player who's got a very good knowledge of geometry, hence his nickname, Angles. I'm not sure if Pep is even called Angles, but Anglais sounds more obviously French.
Yeah, you know what?
Why don't you
sure.
throw in like this Anglais, Pep Anglais?
That sounds good.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Pep Anglais. Yeah. I'm sure someone will be able to correct us on Twitter in due course as well. Should we move on to the Valspar Championship?
We shall, yes. Let's do it.
We have Justin Thomas at the top of the betting at 9-1. Just a reminder as well, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the betting, plus we are paying 8 places each way. Justin Thomas, 9-1. Dustin Johnson, 11-1. Patrick Reed, 20-1. Corey Connors, 20-1. Paul Casey is 22s. Victor Hovland, 22. Scotty Scheffler is 28-1. Tyrrell Hatton is 28-1. Louis Oosthuizen, 30-1, along with Russell Henley and Abraham Anser, and some J-man, Justin Rose, 33-1, Jason Kokrak and Joaquin Niemann, and 40-1 and bigger the rest. And the event cancelled last year due to COVID, Dave, but Paul Casey is going for 3 straight wins in the tournament. And this is one of my favourite events on the schedule, and that's due to the difficulty of the golf course. Copperhead, a real test. The 4 par 5s are tough. The par 3s are lengthy on this layout as well. It's quite a tight course, a course that you can't really attack off the tee. Players speak about laying the tee ball up, and that forces them to hit decent, strong, long irons as well. And that's kind of the recipe for success here. Get the ball in play off the tee and be dialed in with those shots from 175 to 200. And it's a very strong field this week as well. It's one of the fields that's actually benefited to some of the changes in the schedule with the PGA Championship in a few weeks' time. It slots in nicely, doesn't it, with the team event last week and then another slightly weaker event next week. It's a good fit for the Valspar Championship.
Yeah, I think so. And as you say, tough test, last two winning scores for Casey, -8 and -10. So it's definitely one of the courses where the ball strikers, the tee to green merchants think, great, we don't have to kind of come in here with a hot putter. You can, I think Casey's last win, I think he was only just into positive stroke game putting numbers, around 60th odd. So, yeah, it's definitely one way your long game can carry you quite a long way here. And as you say, yeah, good field with Thomas and Dustin Johnson in there, and you've got Reed, Victor Hovland, Tyrrell Hatton's in there. It's quite, you know, it's a long way down, isn't it? And you've still got players being quoted at 33s. It's not like just a few at the top and then it suddenly falls away. You've got a sort of solid bunch of players. So I've got 2 picks.
Yeah, I've got 2 picks as well. Is there anything that you leaned on statistically, or did you look at Florida form this week?
Looked at Florida form. I definitely looked at strokes gained tee to green, with maybe the emphasis there being more on approach and off the tee rather than around the green, of those elements that make up tee to green. I think it's definitely a course for horse type thing. If you look at, we just do the quick look on Wikipedia, where it kind of lists the winners and the runners up. You've just got the same names. You've got Paul Casey winning it back to back. You flick your eyes over to the runners-up. You've got Patrick Reed in there twice. You've got Sean O'Hare finishing runner-up after winning it. I think John Sendon won it after 2 second places before.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's only been going since 2000. And you've already got KJ Choi winning it twice, Retief Goosen winning it twice, Casey winning it twice. So I think if you've got some good course form, I think that counts for plenty.
Very good. I was very tempted by Dustin Johnson this week. I don't know what you make to the head of the betting. I presume you've not gone with Justin Thomas or Dustin Johnson this week. I just think that the way Dustin Johnson struck the ball off the tee at the RBC Heritage, I think he'll have been working really hard in his iron game, and he does have form at the Valspar Championship as well. And I think you're getting kind of a discount on the price because he's overlooked this week on the basis of not being in incredible form. But to finish 13th at the RBC Heritage on a golf course that plainly doesn't suit his game, I think reads really well this week. So I actually expect Dustin Johnson to play really well this week. And I thought 11-1 was an okay price each way. I've decided to leave him out in the end, but I think he might bounce back to his real top form this week.
Yeah. I guess anything fairly normal from him, say like a top 10 at the Masters, and he'd be single digits, wouldn't he, without a shadow of a doubt. for this event. But obviously, that 13th at the Heritage, it was concluded with a 66, so he left in good spirits. His approach play numbers weren't so good, though, you have to admit.
Yeah,
lost two strokes there. And his putter, which had been a bit of a Achilles heel, he was ranked 8th in putting at the Heritage. So I'm not as convinced by his return to normal DJ levels as you, I don't think.
Which one would you take of the two at the top, then?
Neither.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair comment.
I'm definitely in the neither camp.
Okay.
Whilst respecting both, obviously, because they can win anywhere at any time, but they don't jump off the page for me.
Selections then, Dave. Two picks apiece. I'll let you lead off.
Yeah, I'm going for... I've had quite a good run of late with Sink and Billy Horschel, but in between that, I was made to look a complete idiot by Sungjae Im at the Masters.
I'm going with Sungjae Im as well.
Yeah, after he kind of... I did this trends pick thing, which people seem to like, and it suggested he had everything he would need to win the Masters, and he was absolutely disastrous. But it's quite easy just to look at his round scores and think, it was just a nightmare from start to finish. But that doesn't really tell you the whole story. I mean, I always obviously was following him on the Masters app where you could see every shot. So I was following him quite closely. And he got to 2 under very early on, and he was level par playing the 15th. And obviously the 15th at Augusta was a birdie chance, one of the easier holes. And you thought, well, if he can birdie that, minus one, par his way in, then he's top 10 at the end of the day. Well, he took a 9, and it was, well, it's hard to say it was unlucky, but his second shot flew the green, and then his third, I thought, great, that's going to pull up for a kind of 8-footer for birdie, and just kept rolling. It was particularly hard on that first day. And it rolled off into the water, something that we didn't see in November when it was playing softer and there was a bit more kind of rough holding balls up. But this was... when he was second, obviously this maybe threw him, and it just kept going, and we get that familiar sight of a ball trickling on an angle into water at Augusta, and then he went to pieces after that, hit his next one into the water and just never got it back. So it was quite encouraging, I thought, the following week, that he opened so well at the Heritage. 68, 65, 69, he was fourth going into the final round, didn't play well on the Sunday, but he was still 13th, so that was a good bounce back performance. You look at his record in Florida, it's fantastic. 2019, he played 3 times, third at Bay Hill, fourth at this event, his only start in this event. Then 2020, he won the Honda Classic, third at Bay Hill. And then this year, he did play all 4 events on the Florida swing, got better every time, 28th, 21st, 17th and 8th when defending the Honda. So he's just a very good player in Florida when it's tough. And this absolutely explains the test on offer this week. Good approach numbers at the Heritage. Great player off the tee, which you need to be here. But I think that 30-1 is a bit odd for a guy who's world number 19. You've got some players up there who maybe just a bit more flavour of the day for certain reasons, like Corey Connors. I think Corey Connors got a great chance, but I can't, you know, without some sort of recent biases in play, I just don't think Im is 30-1 in this field.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I think you've described his chance succinctly and perfectly there. And I suppose the only real negative with Sungjae Im was his performance at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans with Benny Arn last week, because he wasn't that good, was he? And that's the only real negative you can put beside the name Sungjae Im.
Yeah, maybe. Do you want Benny Arn sort of putting for you when you open? So, I mean, Benny Arn's in terrible form, really, outside the world's top 100. I think it's hard to say, well, or maybe I should put it, it's easy to gloss over last week, I think, because it's just a different dynamic. I wouldn't get too bogged down. To have all those positives and then sort of turn away at the last minute because he didn't play well in a pairs event, I think you sort of you're getting in your own way if you do that. So I'm prepared to ignore the Zurich for that, for those reasons.
Yeah, agreed. And yeah, I like Sungjae at 30-1 as well. Who's your second pick then, Dave?
Yeah, so I'm going further down for Lucas Glover.
Okay. Bit more left field.
Yeah, a bit more left field. Lucas Glover 70-1, but I think he's playing some nice golf at the minute. Last three starts, he was 33rd at the Heritage with 67 and a couple of 69s. Fourth in the Texas Open, which is a fine effort, closing round 66. 19th at the Honda. So some nice form of late, Lucas Glover. At this course, he's got a fourth quite a long way back, but then he's sprinkled five more top 25s, including two out of the last three. 13th in the last edition, 18th the one before that. Loads of good form in Florida. You know, the last maybe 4 years, he's got Bay Hill 7th, Players' Championship 6th, 4th at the Honda, another 10th at Bay Hill, 2nd in the Web.com Tour Championship when he dipped down a level. Maybe Stuart Sink, who won a major in 2009, as did Lucas Glover, shows you that it's a bit easy to write these older guys off. And although Glover, hasn't had the kind of season Stuart Sink has had, I think 4th two starts ago is encouraging. The other thing, you kind of would presume he's going to have good long game stats, and that's the case. 4th for strokes gained tee to green in Texas, 4th off the tee at the Heritage. What's kind of making your eyes pop a bit is his putting, which normally just lets him down horrendously. But at the Honda Classic, he was 4th for strokes gained putting, gaining over 6.5 strokes on the field. If he can marry that to his long game, I think 70-1 each way more than appeals. So Lucas Glover, I do think he's got some solid form lines wherever you approach it, a bit of course form, Florida form, current form. The game that should fit here. I thought 70-1 was good anyway.
70-1, Lucas Glover. Yeah, I like it. 70-1. I'm slightly short in the market for my second selection, but maybe quite a similar mold to Lucas Glover in the fact that I think he's overlooked due to his age and the fact that he doesn't win as much as he should do. But Charlie Hoffman's my second pick at 45-1. He's got a mixed record at the Valspar Championship, but he comes into this event just in blistering form. And even though we know he doesn't win enough, I thought 45-1 was more than acceptable. Before the Heritage, he'd gained 23 strokes on the field on approach in his four measured events prior to that, which is just incredible iron play. And that seems to be a key to success at Copperhead. And he's putting really well. 11th at the Valspar back in 2016, 18th on his last visit in 2019. And what I liked about that 18th place finish is that came on the back of three missed cuts before arriving at Innisbrook a couple of years ago. And I think he's overlooked because of his age and he doesn't win enough, but he's 7th in the field tee to green in his last 50 rounds and he's putting superbly. And I thought each way at 45-1 with 8 places, he was worth a few quid this week, Dave.
Yeah, he's definitely on my sort of short list of maybe 6 or 7. Last 4 starts in Florida are all top 20s. Gave Jordan Spieth a good run for his money, didn't he, in Texas, as you say?
And yeah,
he just looks so he's having one of these flourishes where, you know, you ride the hot horse because this seems an obvious place where it should continue.
Who was on that shortlist then, Dave, away from the, well, we've got 3 selections, haven't we, between us this week. Who came closest?
Well, Corey Connors, definitely, because he's in fine form. But I struggle when I start to compare him to other players. So, for example, he's the same price as Patrick Reed, who's won God knows what, all sorts of big events, as well as being a 2-time runner-up here, as well as finishing tied 8th at the Masters. I mean, I'm almost talking myself into backing Patrick Reed when I start to say that. But yeah, if you're having those in a match bet, I'd pick Reed there if it was, you know, off evens. Casey has just gone off the boil a bit for me, as well as having the pressure. Obviously, he's shown he can defend, but going back a little bit. Hovland is interesting because there was a quote knocking around a few weeks ago where someone, I don't know when he'd said it, but someone had found him saying, I'm not a particular fan of Florida courses. But I think by that he meant just kind of flat ones that are a bit monotonous.
Yeah.
It might be revealing that his one good performance in Florida came at the concession, which was a bit different, wasn't it? It was a bit of a different visual to it all, the Workday Championship. He was second there. So I think he's interesting. I think he did well enough at the Masters, 21st.
Do you think he's just gone? Do you think he's just gone off the boil ever so slightly as well? Yeah, and you mentioned that about Paul Casey.
Well, I think he went off the boil, but I think he's coming back on the boil.
Okay.
Where Casey maybe is just drifting the other way. In Casey's, there's a slight element of because we expected a lot of Augusta, then we kind of think that what was he tied 26th? I think is a bit disappointing, but he then missed the cut at the Heritage. In terms of world ranking, Tyrrell Hatton at 28, so he's got lots of good Florida.
Yeah, I was very close with Hatton. Yeah. I think he'll go really well. I think he likes a tough, demanding test as well, doesn't he?
Yes.
And I think that 28 to 1 is nice. And I like the other Englishman as well up towards the top of the betting, Justin Rose, who seems to be back on song now at 30 to 1. And you were talking about horses for courses here. I think he's first in strokes gained tee to green at the Valspar Championship in the last decade or so.
Yeah, obviously played well, didn't he, with Stenson last week. I mean, you can look at Stenson, who was on a horrendous run. I mean, he shot an 85 on day one at Sawgrass, but tied 38th at the Masters by Stenson, where he's never done particularly brilliantly. That was all right, and then he's built on it a bit. In terms of course form here, he's only been outside the top 25 once in five appearances. He's got 4th, 7th and 11th. Mm. If you were throwing a dart, I guess, at a three-figure price, Stenson has got the class at 100 to 1. It's just whether you believe he's coming back a little bit.
At 100 to 1, I like Doug Gim as well. If you're looking purely on the numbers, Doug Gim is massively overpriced at 100 to 1 this week. So I just think he's a player with an immense future ahead of him.
Yeah, we saw him play really well, didn't we, at Sawgrass before he had a bit of a nightmare finish. But he was up there and you thought, oh, we've got a... Was he US amateur runner-up, I think? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think if... You know, you often look back to those finals who won them or were runner-up, and they do go on, they do train on, a lot of them, so... He's one who could come good. I don't know if you did. You pick up on Peter Uihlein playing well the last few weeks?
Yeah, because he won on the Korn Ferry Tour and then finished third in the pairs event last week in the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. And yeah, I did pick up on that and just wondered where the 100 to 1 was.
The compilers have picked up on it too, basically.
Yeah, I think so. I think.
And there's no kind of sneaky Florida angle to him either. You look at his record in Florida, it's fairly grim, to be honest.
Yeah.
So that doesn't...
Did you have Russell... just slightly short in the betting, did you have Russell Henley on your mind at 30s?
Yeah. But the second part of that sentence, at 30s, was the problem, I think. Just compared to him. Jason Kobrak, I thought you might have looked at.
Yeah, I did. I think he'll go well at 32. He's kind of in the similar mould to... This is why I think Corey Connors is so underpriced this week at 20s personally, because you see Kokrak has got a very similar skill set, and I know Connors is maybe in slightly better nick, but not that much better on the numbers, and Kokrak's a much bigger price this week at 33s.
Yeah, and Kokrak's record, he's won, and look at his record in Florida is superb. He's got 6 top 10s in his last 8 starts in Florida.
Yeah.
So I think at 33s, he would, you know, he's certainly on the edge of an each way price there, I think.
Shall we wrap up, Dave?
Yes, let's do that.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner. If you wish to do so, you can give us the correct pronunciation of Pep Onglet.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can let us know your thoughts on this week's two events as well. Let's recap the picks then, Dave. You're going with in Tenerife, firstly.
Yeah, I think if angles is the correct pronunciation, I think that's the biggest outsider we've landed this week. It's never going to be that, is it?
That's fair comment.
66s or higher. So in Europe, I'll go a point each way, Conor Syme at 50-1. And Valspar, I'll go, you've got him as well, I'll just go a point each way, Sungjae at 30s, and a point each way, Lucas Glover at 70s.
Very good. I'm going a point each way on Jeff Winter at 40-1 in the Tenerife Open, and in the Valspar Championship, I'll take a point each way. Join you with that, Sungjae at 30-1, and a point each way, Charlie Hoffman at 45-1 for me this week. Dave, thank you for your company.
Cheers, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Do make sure you follow us on Twitter at Dave Tyndall Golf and at D Kellner. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app on the Valspar Championship this week. A lovely concession, top prize guaranteed on the top 10, plus we are paying 8 places each way. Thank you for tuning in to the Golf Podcast, and the best of luck with your bets ahead of the Tenerife Open and the Valspar Championship this week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.